I'm going to show you today, I believe I can prove to you today, that the Bible prophesies about this PCG building God's house. And I think God has revealed that to me, and He did on December the 7th. This must be a pretty special day to God. And I always like to have a celebration because it does mean so much to God. I mean, after all, where is there a work on this earth that really, really has a vision and believes in Jerusalem, New Jerusalem? I mean, not just Jerusalem, even within the millennium, but New Jerusalem coming down from God the Father to this earth. Pretty powerful message. But I want to, before I get into that, I wanted to give you some background. I had a pretty hard day Thursday, and I was eager for a good night's sleep. So I went home, went to bed. I think I went to bed about 10 p.m. And then I woke up just a little after 1, and I have to tell you, that depressed me a little bit because I was so tired that I wanted a good night's sleep. Well, I got up about 2 a.m. I could not get sleepy, so this was, of course, into December the 7th. And I had an idea of what I wanted to talk about. I made a few notes, and that's about all. And I wanted to go over those notes and try to analyze them and see if that was really something I'd like to speak about today. And I found that I'd left those notes at the office. And that made me even a little sadder still. Because I thought, man, now I'm wide awake and I can't even think about what I want to talk about today. So I thought, well, since I don't have my notes, I'll just go directly to the Bible and read those scriptures and think about them without those notes. And I was glad I did because I saw something, frankly, that I'd never seen in this way before. And I think God had something to do with that. You know, we're so focused sometimes on what we're going to do. God has to kind of derail us to get us to see what He wants us to see. And sometimes it's mild and sometimes it's violent. Of course, we think about that when we think about the tribulation. But I want to show you something in Zechariah 3 that I had never thought about in this way, that I believe God also showed me. Because we need to really know it, brethren. You need to know it, and I need to know it. It's just as important for me to know it as it is for you, and vice versa. I will tell you this, and when I understood this and thought about it, you know, I didn't have any depressed thoughts in my head. I was really moved by that, and I was inspired. There is cause and effect, isn't there? I mean, when we get really down, what is the problem? Well, I can tell you primarily it's because we've lost our focus on what I'm going to mention here. This is where our joy really is. And we need to remember that. Zechariah 3, verses 1 and 2. And he showed me Joshua the high priest standing before the angel of the Eternal, and Satan standing at his right hand to resist him. Satan was there. And the Eternal said unto Satan, "The Eternal rebuke you, O Satan, even the Eternal that has chosen Jerusalem, rebuke you. The Eternal that has chosen Jerusalem, rebuke you." Is not this a brand plucked out of the fire? He's talking about a Joshua who is a symbol really of all the Laodiceans, and they're going to be a brand plucked out of the fire if they make it. It's going to be a real violent act that causes them to turn to God. This leads up to the building of God's house that I want to talk to you about, but you and I are here to learn to think like God. And he says here, the Eternal has chosen does that mean? Well, we need to think about it more, because it is a vision. And why did God put it right here where Joshua was, who got, and where it got so bad that Satan had him in bondage? And so God shows us why he got in bondage and how you can get out, or how you can stay out of bondage. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. I mean, it all revolves around that. That's the key of David's vision. That's what it's really about. And that's the United States and Britain, and prophecy tells us a lot about that. But Joshua got in serious trouble. We could say, well, let's not get overly dramatic about that. But it's about a real human being. A real human being. That many of us know. And I think one of the most pathetic examples in all the Bible. Because this could happen to me, and it can happen to you. It could happen to anybody in this room. But he was in the bonds of Satan. Because he didn't think as the Eternal did. He hadn't chosen Jerusalem. New Jerusalem, eternal Jerusalem. And he really lost that. And all of the Laodiceans have. They don't see that. They think they do. But they're so shallow that it's, frankly, it's frightening to me when they deceive some of our people. And I'm not just saying that, brethren. I really mean that. They are so shallow, it's embarrassing. If you just know the Bible. And you and I must know the Bible. This is about the church, this old vision. And this is about New Jerusalem that I mentioned to you before. Notice verse 8 of chapter 3. Hear now, O Joshua the high priest, you and your fellows. Your fellows, they've lost the vision, and they were looking to Joshua. That sit before you, for they are men wondered at, or men of sign. They're men of sign that the branch is about to come. For behold, I will bring forth my servant the branch. The Father's going to bring forth the Son, the branch. The Father is involved here. With this greatest vision in the Bible, the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. What should that mean for all of mankind? The Eternal God has chosen Jerusalem. Oh, does that mean a lot of change for Jerusalem? Verse 9, for behold the stone that I have laid before Joshua, that's a symbol of Christ, upon one stone shall be seven eyes. What are those seven eyes? Well, if you want to know, if you know anything about the PCG, you're going to have to know about those seven eyes and how God really does give His church sight. We know what's happening in this world. We know what's happening in the Laodicean church because we prove it. We know and we see. We see exactly what's happening in the world. And God says you'd better watch and warn so that you are worthy to be, or accounted worthy to escape. You better be careful, and you better watch, and you better use these eyes, and you better use the eyes of God, or you're not going to see. The Laodiceans are blind. They don't see. They think they see, though deep down they know something is wrong with them spiritually, because they heard the same truths that many of us heard. And they ought to know better. But the Father and Jesus Christ have chosen Jerusalem. And oh, what an inspiring vision that is. They chose Jerusalem. That's Isaiah 9 and verse 7. That is eternal Jerusalem. So, brethren, this is pretty deep knowledge when you think about it. What does it mean to you when you hear somebody say, or you hear this scripture, the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem? What does it mean to you? I mean, it's really a lot of spiritual depth. It really isn't a lot of Bible study if you're going to understand this. And it has to do with being in Jerusalem forever and in headquarters forever. Especially, it's important to the Philadelphians because they're going to be right there for all eternity with God, and the Laodiceans are not going to be there because Satan took that reward away from them. They don't have the same goal that the Eternal has. They haven't chosen Jerusalem. They're not going to be able to sit there at headquarters in Jerusalem forever because they were blind. They were just blind. Satan attacked them and took it all away from them. Now they're going to repent in the tribulation, but they're still not going to be headquartered at Jerusalem. And because they didn't understand that vision today, they did not know, brethren, they didn't know that the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem, and that's really the deepest vision in all the Bible. And God is saying, well, now if you want to stay away from the influence of the devil, and you want to be excited in this life, and happy and thrilled to be a part of this, you better understand this vision, or Satan is going to get to you. That's what this is all about. And I never had understood that this way before. But I do now, and I think God wanted me to know it so I could pass it on to you. When God sees His people turning away, what does God do? Say, go ahead, I don't care. No, He doesn't do that at all. He tries to get them to get their minds on Jerusalem. You know, it tells the whole story about David's throne, the key of David, everything. And what does it mean to us? I mean, you see, before Satan gets to you, first something terrifying has to happen. You lose the vision. And if your father has chosen Jerusalem, well, his sons ought to choose it too, as you heard the choir singing in those powerful song, that powerful song that they sang today. Sons of God, think like their father. This is especially true, you see, for all of the first fruits. Some of them are not going to get the highest reward. Some of them are not going to make it at all. But this is real, brethren. I tell you, when you start thinking about the Laodiceans out there and people that you know, they have names and you know what they're doing and you know what they were and what they used to be and what they used to understand. But they today have not chosen Jerusalem. They don't understand it anymore, if they ever did. And I hope and pray that they do understand it again. But only the Philadelphians really get this. A little group of people in the PCG that are terribly small, but they have chosen Jerusalem. They've chosen Jerusalem. And you and I must never lose this great vision. It really does have everything to do with your spiritual depth and understanding and your joy, even in your worst trials. I mean, how can you rejoice in your trials if you haven't chosen Jerusalem? How could you do that? How can you rejoice in a trial if you haven't chosen Jerusalem? And you know your Father is helping you get there. That's what it's all about. Why do you hear so much about Jerusalem? Now you know Joshua's a real man. Zerubbabel, a real man in this end time. So this gets down to human beings like you and me that we know oftentimes. It's going to take some deep Bible study to understand this. I mean, you're going to have to get to know what the Eternal knows, what the Father knows, and what the Son knows, and have their goal. They have chosen Jerusalem, and nothing will ever stop them from getting there and doing what they plan on doing. Not even if they have to give up one of those members to die for all of us, so we can be there in spite of our sins. Nothing is going to stop God from choosing Jerusalem. And that's what the way He wants us to think. We're His children. We're His sons. And how shocking it is to us, perhaps not so much to God, but how shocking it is that 95% of God's people turn away, and there are miracles all over the place. And I could sit here and talk for 10,000 years and tell you what I'm telling you today, and if you, I'll be honest with you, if you have a government problem, you're not going to understand this. You know why? Because God has to give you that understanding. If you have a government problem, you're not going to get it. A good understanding of they that keep my commandments. And the first one really is the one about government, isn't it? And I'm talking about the government, the real government, and the head of this church, Jesus Christ. But you know, brethren, I have never understood this that way before. And I don't believe anybody else has. Why do you suppose that the Father, our Father, might want us to know this on the Sabbath, just after the anniversary of this church? He really wants this very elect, these Philadelphians, to get this. To really deeply understand and choose Jerusalem. Why do we have so much to do with Jerusalem? Why? What's it all about? Did you know those other churches of God that were there under Mr. Armstrong don't talk about this? Because they've lost it. And they're in the bonds of Satan too, in a sort of a way, anyhow. In some ways, you want me to tell you how many times you've gotten discouraged when you were filled with this vision? I can tell you, not once. Not once. You're not going to be bogged down with discouragement if you have this vision in your mind. Now, that's not to say you're not going to have some rough times, but I mean what I say. This is the way to avoid discouragement. The people in the Laodicean churches have dealt with discouragement in a different way. Thinking, well, somehow, if I can get out from under that regime and that law and that government that Herbert Armstrong taught, I know it's going to be better. And it is for them in a way, in a carnal way. They don't have to submit to the government of God. And so they just remain carnal, and God kicks them into the outer court and says, okay, I can't do anything with them now. I've told them what they're lacking, what they really need. A father does that. He wants his sons to really know. And if we keep our attitudes right, you know something? He's going to tell us everything we need to know. And he's going to make December the 7th, 1989, a special day. And a special day, and a special year, every year after that. Can you tell me that it hasn't been special? Look at what we have done, brethren. Look at what we have done. A little group of people, smaller than United by a pretty large margin, and they're just wallowing around out in the wilderness, doing nothing and going nowhere, and certainly not to Jerusalem. They're not going there. And you and I are going to Jerusalem. I mean, this train is going to Jerusalem. And if you get off the train, well, the train keeps right on going. Because it doesn't depend on me. It doesn't depend on you. It depends on God. But of course, He does use people to get the work done. This is that key of David's vision, and another expressed in a different way. But here, Satan comes along, and isn't it amazing that he can just strangle that vision? Strangle it in so many of God's people. Will he do it in your life? Is this your goal? Here's how people get derailed. This is what sank the Laodicean leaders and the Laodiceans. Well, it is kind of interesting, as we've said so many times, why it happened on December the 7th. What a part of Israel was attacked another time, and here it's spiritual Israel. He's always attacking us. And you heard last night about that. And here, when I went to get fired, and really, and when I look back on that, I think I should have done better in that. Believe me, I'm not just saying that. And I could see where I could do better, certainly. But I remember going, when I was going out there, and I thought I would see Mr. Dukach. And I've told you this before, but I was in St. Louis, and Mr. Dukach was in Chicago, and we would meet when we played softball. And I got to know Mr. Dukach fairly well, and we'd have a lot of good softball games. So I knew him from quite a long way back. He was there when I first came in the church, and I considered him in a way like an old friend. But when I was fired, and I was even in the ministry, of course, and got fired, and he was there in Pasadena, and he didn't even come and say anything because he was in the bonds of Satan, and his son had virtually taken over. Now, you'd think, brethren, I hope and pray to God, if I had a friendship like that, I'd be there. If they got in trouble, I would be there. Or I'd feel pretty scummy for not going to help an old friend, wouldn't you? Wouldn't you look at it that way? I think we would. Notice Galatians 4 and verse 25. Who wants to see their friends, their closest, sometimes closest friends, turn away from God? Nobody surely wants to see that. Verse 25 and verse 26. For this Agar is Mount Sinai in Arabia, and answers to Jerusalem, which now he is, and is in bondage with her children. But Jerusalem, which is above, is free, which is the mother of us all. Jerusalem above. See, the verse 25 of the Moffat says that is Hagar for Mount Sinai is away in Arabia. She corresponds to the present Jerusalem, for the latter is in servitude with her children. So, this Mount Sinai in Arabia is where the old covenant was made. And then verse 26 talks about Jerusalem, which is above, is free. See, there's the Jerusalem today, the symbol the Jerusalem today, which is a symbol of this world and what's going on in this world. But then there's Jerusalem above, which is the mother of all of us. And you get all, there's all kinds of power available to us, all kinds of understanding. And that Jerusalem above tells us all about Jerusalem below. And that Eternal has chosen Jerusalem on this earth. Chosen Jerusalem. And that Jerusalem above is our headquarters. And that's where we go to get our vision and our direction. I'll just read this scripture to you quickly. In Hebrews 12, verses 22 and 23, it says, "But you are coming to Mount Zion, unto the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem." How much do you think about the heavenly Jerusalem? You see, God sees all that when He chooses Jerusalem, but He wants His family to get in this, get in on this wonderful freedom and this wonderful future where God the Father is going to rule from all for all eternity from Jerusalem with His Son and His bride and His other sons. He's going to rule forever. That's what this is all about. You ought to read Revelation 21 and 22, where that wonderful heavenly Jerusalem is described. And really, the choir sang about today, no more tears. God's going to wipe away the tears. I mean, you may have a lot of tears today. You might even walk into a mall like some people did in Omaha, Nebraska, and have some demented human being gun you down. 8 people killed as they were shopping for Christmas presents, I would think. And God's trying to get us to think family. You know that young man that shot them? I forget his age. I think he was 19. I believe he was still a teenager. And his parents divorced when he was 3 years old. And he never did really have any parents after that. He was just bounced around from one home to another, foster care and all of that. And it just kept going on and on until finally the guy went mad. Mad! Like the world is going mad. Because they won't listen to God and they won't believe in His miracles. And so God has to try to get their attention somehow. They're going mad. What is a little 3-year-old supposed to do when mom and dad just say, "Goodbye, I'm going my way," and leave him to whatever is there? You think it's that young boy's fault? Oh, I'll tell you, we'll never solve our problems if we don't see that that's not the case. God is a family. And I don't care what you do. If you repent, He will never desert you. Not ever. And yet parents today can run away from their children, have children come into this world, human beings made in the likeness of God, and just desert them. Well, isn't that what they tell them today? Look, if you're not happy, you have to get out of the situation. Don't worry about the children. Don't worry about the other mate. You've got to do your own thing. You've got to find your own happiness, and you've got to be selfish. Don't listen to God and His law and His government. And so we're going mad. And still won't listen. What does it take? What does it take to get a Laodicean to listen? You think they might be right? Does anybody think they might be right? You better look at yourself, because you may be having a government problem and your understanding is fading away. Better be careful, brethren. This is serious, serious business. You think it isn't serious for that young man who just couldn't stand to live anymore and wanted to go out with a bang, and so he did. Evil beyond words. Of course he's evil. think you could make it under those circumstances? You young people, if you have parents, and most of you do, that really work to look after you, you'd better thank God for them. That's all that separates you from some crazy act like that. And if you don't have them, well, God will provide the need in various ways. But you better thank God for somebody who loves you and wants to direct your life, because they do love you. And God knows how to make it work. If you want to desert that and leave that and get away from that, well, that's your choice. But it's not going to bring you what you want. I wrote in the Ezekiel booklet, Jerusalem is a type of national Israel, but there is also a Jerusalem above, the mother of us all, which is the church. In Ezekiel 16, God's primary focus is on Jerusalem above, the end time church of God. God's church receives truth from Jerusalem above. This is probably one of the most inspiring chapters in the Bible. Of course, it also applies generally to national Israel. However, the main focus is on a wife who has broken her marriage vows. Oh, I see. She didn't want God to rule her. That's what happened. Well, she didn't want God to rule her. Oh, that old oppressive law that teaches you happiness and joy and real success. She didn't want any of that. So look at Israel today. And as you heard last night, the young people think Sodom and Gomorrah is a marriage. And they don't realize that spiritually that's what they are. They're sick. They're sick and they're dying. And it's not a pleasant thing to see. And of course, when we tell them about the law and the government, they're going to hate it in a lot of cases. But we still must tell them. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. Looks pretty bad in Jerusalem, doesn't it? Looks like it's just about over in Jerusalem, and it is. But the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. That's enough for anybody. If you know that and you understand that, and nobody else is going to solve the problems in Jerusalem, not even close. And we're trying awfully hard right now. I hope you'll pray for our students that are over there. There were 10 Jews that came in, kind of tried to harass them, and there was some heated argument, I guess. Heated words, and I think it's over now and calmed down. But still, it just shows how we need to pray that God would protect our students and our work over there and what we're doing. Because Satan, of course, is going to try to destroy it. But why are we there, brethren? Why are we in Jerusalem? What's the point? Is there any real reason for being in Jerusalem? Yes, there is. Now, Dr. Mazar was not there when that happened. And I think the students thought maybe this was God's way, too, perhaps, of speeding things up a little. And they're digging faster. And I guess you and I need to get in the Spirit and dig faster, right? Get Roger Brandon and Rob Wynn to digging faster out there. And I'll tell you, I'm just happy to have them out there when we have to build that house for God. Because it seems to me like they're pretty fast diggers. I thought it was interesting, too, that Dr. Mazar was invited to speak at what appears to be, well, as far as I can tell, the most important or perhaps the most prestigious conference in all of Israel sometime in January. And I mean, they ask anybody who is anybody to speak in Israel and from all over the world. Like the prime minister and the foreign minister and the Netanyahu and people like that. And a couple of political stars from the U.S. and other countries. And they invited Dr. Mazar to speak. So her star is rising, which I think it's good because she is a great lady there in Israel and doing some great work. But why, brethren? Why are we there? Why do we have students over in Jerusalem? You know, it's because the Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. That's why our students are over there. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. And if we don't go to Jerusalem, if we don't fight our way there, we're going nowhere. Nowhere. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem, where David's throne is going to be forever. I wonder if we do deeply understand why we're in Jerusalem. I think most of our people do. I hope they do. But that's why we're there. That's why we're there. And we have been given eyes and lamps. Notice Zechariah 3 and verse 9. Zechariah 3 and verse 9. Very familiar scriptures. For behold, the stone that I have laid before Joshua upon one stone shall be seven eyes. Behold, I will engrave the graving thereof, says the Eternal of Hosts. He's going to engrave this in us spiritually, and I will remove the iniquity of that land in one day. But there's seven eyes. Seven eyes or seven pairs of eyes, I guess it could read. But there's an eye, each one of them, the eyes represent an era, a church era, from the time of Christ all the way down to the very beginning, the last one being that headed by Christ and Mr. Armstrong under him. So God wants us to see. Now, if we're doing God's work in those eras, we're going to see. And I mean see what is going on in this world and what is going on in God's church. We must see. That's number 5869 in Strong's, if you want to study it a little more. Verse 10. In that day, says the Eternal, O shall you call every man his neighbor under the vine and the fig tree. And then verse, let's go on down to Zechariah 4 and verse 10, and you'll see these eyes again. For who has despised the day of small things? For they shall rejoice and shall see the plummet in the hand of Zerubbabel with those seven. They are the eyes of the Eternal, which run to and fro through the whole earth. Well, brethren, if we have the eyes of the Eternal, we must see. The Laodiceans are blind. Who are those people that are blind? And who are those people that see? Now, we must get this. We must get it. Luke 21, verse 36 talks about, watch that you be accounted worthy to escape. Let's go back to Zechariah 4 and verse 2. We'll see another part of this about the eyes and the lamps. And said unto me, what do you see? And I said, well, I have looked, and behold, a candlestick of all gold with a bowl upon the top of it, and his seven lamps thereon, and seven pipes to the seven lamps which are upon the top thereof. So we have seven lamps, and we have a lamp today. And a lamp you can see in the world. Everybody that can see a lamp in a dark world. Everybody, anybody that can see and has these eyes of God can see. It's a lamp in a dark room. If you turn these lights off and somebody had this lamp, everybody could see it. And this world has to see it. although they don't know what it is. Revelation 4 and verse 5, I want to show you what these lamps are a type of. This is reality. Verse 5 of Revelation 4. And out of the throne proceeded lightnings and thunderings and voices. And there were seven lamps of fire burning before the throne, which are the seven spirits of God. That lamp is number 5216 in Strong's, and here's what it says. It comes from number 5214, and here's a definition of that one. It is to make a field shine. I mean, this lamp really makes a field shine. It makes this work shine. It really is something that the world can see, like the house of God. And like this message going out to the world. And it's all this, what we're doing down here, this lamp down here, is just a type of what is up there. And those seven lamps are burning all the time, even at 2 o'clock in the morning. I mean, you, no matter what time you might be trying to make contact with God, the lamps are shining. Isn't that wonderful? They are there all the time. And it takes oil to make those lamps shine. And that oil is a type of God's Holy Spirit. If we're going to shine to this world, it's going to take the Holy Spirit, not by power nor by might, but by my Spirit. And so God puts that inset into Zechariah 3, 4, and 5. A lesson that Mr. Armstrong taught us. It's about him and his era. If we're going to do it, brethren, it's going to be God, because that oil, that Holy Spirit of God, we're not going to do anything without that. We may think we can, and we can get into a lot of human reasoning, but it isn't going to take us any place. But just think about that, those lamps coming down to this earth in New Jerusalem, and just light up this world like it's hard to even imagine. And this little church right now has the lamp that is a type of that lamp up there. How's that for excitement and something to really lift your spirits if you understand it deeply? How blessed we are to be a part of that. You look at those temples in the Old Testament, Solomon's temple, and you can see that in 2 Chronicles 4 and Exodus 30, that the lamp burned all night long, all the time. The lamp just kept burning and burning and burning. And that's what we must do. We must keep the lamp burning. And it takes power, and we have all the power you can imagine and all that we could ever need to keep that lamp burning. And how about in your life? I mean, really now, brethren, this just gets down to the nitty-gritty here. In mine as well. How bright is that lamp in your life? What kind of a light are you? How much do you enlighten others? What kind of an example are you to others and to the world? What kind of an example are you? Are you really a light like that light up there in heavenly Jerusalem that is burning now as as I speak, all seven of them, in fact. God says we have to be a light. What kind of a light are the Laodiceans in this world? Well, they just sort of disappeared. Where are they? Where is their work? Where is their message? And what is their message? We've got to keep that lamp burning all the time. Zechariah 4 verse 6 says that. It's by the Spirit, and we've got to bring forth the headstone, it says in verse 7, and that's Jesus Christ. And Mr. Armstrong did that, brethren. We've got to bring forth the headstone in our individual lives. Do people see Christ in you? Well, when I think about that, I have to say, I really need to make some changes there. And I know we all do, brethren, but that's what people need to see. They need to see Christ and not ourselves. They need to see light. Really, brethren. I don't know if I've mentioned this before or not, I just happened to think about it, but there's this quarterback of the, I think it's the New England Patriots. Is it Tom Brady? Is that his name? Okay, that's his name. All right. I thought it was him. Anyhow, I might have mentioned this before, but I'll mention it again. But anyhow, he was being interviewed, and somebody asked him, man, you've won all these awards. You've won the Super Bowl 3 times, and you've just won it all. And isn't that amazing? And isn't that a wonderful life? And he said, well, there must be more. times, and you just want it all, and isn't that amazing, and isn't that a wonderful life? And he said, well, there must be more than that. And the interrogator said, well, do you know what it is? And he said, no, I don't. Do you know what it is, brother? Those men are empty like everybody else. I don't care if they have $50 trillion. They're empty. They're purposeless. They know nothing. Nothing about the eternal choosing Jerusalem. They don't know. They don't know their purpose in life. They don't know who they are and why they are. They don't know anything. I mean, we teach the basics of Adventist College all the time, and they don't want it because, well, hey, don't come at me with that law and the government and that stuff, but I would like to know. Sure you would. Well, then quit rebelling, and God will tell you what a fantastic future you have. And won't be long till we'll end football as we know it here forever. Because it's a dirty game. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't watch it, but it gets pretty nasty sometimes, I'll tell you that. Sometimes it gets me in a bad attitude and I just turn away. I just cut off the TV if I'm watching. Because I think, well, they really play dirty, and I think they take great delight in killing somebody on the opposing team sometimes. Let me read you something from Rod Meredith and the Living Church of God. I'll have to move along pretty fast because I've got the main part of this sermon I haven't even gotten to yet. I mean, that's bad. That's bad news right now, I'll tell you. Okay, but I'll move fast. But I wanted you to listen to this. Thank you for your comments. This is a personal correspondence from the Living Church of God. Personal correspondence department like we have here. Dear friend, thank you for your comments and concerns. However, we cannot agree with the religious jargon of the Philadelphia Church of God. In December 1992, it became abundantly clear to Roderick C. Meredith that the Worldwide Church had irreversibly changed or rejected all the major doctrines and so on and so on. And Mr. Meredith was inspired to revive the work. Well, what did you suppose he did? I mean, did he really do that? He did sit there at Mr. Armstrong's feet. Are you sure he didn't? Well, he's got one page here. One page of all to convince people that we're wrong. One foolish little page. Well, he says the Living Church of God bases its beliefs on the Holy Bible, the inspired Word of God. Sounds good to me. Its doctrines, practices, and policies have their roots in the Worldwide Church of God under the pastorship of Mr. Armstrong, who ordained Mr. Meredith our presiding evangelist as one of that organization's first evangelists. Well, that's right. Pretty good credentials, huh? First event, one of the first evangelists. I might also tell you this. Mr. Armstrong said later on that he would never do that again. I mean, ordain evangelists when they were young, like Rod Meredith was. But that's nevertheless, he was what he says he was. The record shows that the Living Church of God deeply honors and preaches the truth restored through Mr. Armstrong as he taught them. And I tell you, brethren, that is a huge lie. But that's what he says. Do you know he's really lying? God says in Revelation 3 and verse 9, they're liars. They really are. Well, okay. He says he taught them as Mr. Armstrong taught them. And I tell you, brethren, he does not. He does not. But you need to know that. You see, we still have people from time to time that will leave this church and they don't know, apparently. They just don't know that. But I tell you this, if they have chosen Jerusalem, they would know. And they'd have a lot more than a one page to show you that Rod Meredith doesn't know what he's talking about. But anybody who will accept one page as proof is one of the biggest... What should I say? Well, I'll tell you this. He's not a real biblical scholar. I mean, please. A page? Is that all we're worth? A page? And then he says, we normally do not comment on other church organizations, but we'll make an exception in this case. Oh, I mean, we are bad, bad. Think about that. Are you sure you know what you're a part of? Are you sure? Because you better know. Well, he talks about the me and the book about that prophet, and he says that I'm taking the title that Jesus Christ has, and I explain that in the first three pages of the book, and use the same scriptures he does, and says those apply to Jesus Christ, and then I show the others don't, and he says nothing about them. But still, he says I'm a kook for doing that. But I'm telling you, could I wonder if I could get the people that read this page to read three more pages? You see why they're deceived? They're blind. They don't know anything about what God's doing, and they don't want to know. Well, anyhow, he went on to talk about Malachi's message and just totally has it all wrong, and I won't take time to get into that, I guess. But I can easily disprove it. He says in the Revelation 10 is about after you're into the first six of the trumpet plagues. Well, let me tell you, that's not true. There's another work there about prophesying again that we have to do. But he said, Mr. Armstrong never taught many of the things that this organization espouses. In fact, Mr. Armstrong would be utterly amazed and angered that scriptures, including those of Hosea and Amos, would be so twisted and such with false teachings would be linked to his name as if it came from him. Well, now, there's a lot there we did not say that came from him. But look, brethren, when God says, prove all things, I mean, you're going to have to prove it. We bring these young people here, and I think a wonderful student body that inspires me, but we bring them here to prove all things. You better know God. Mr. Armstrong said, the problem with this world is they don't know God, and the Laodiceans don't know God. And they don't want to know it. But he says you better approve all things. And I just want you to think about a little reverse psychology. And think about it. I think in a way that's a kind of a proof that we are God's church. If you were a Laodicean, and you were sitting there, and you know there's this little group that exposes you for who you are, and he mentioned that in there, that we even label the other groups Laodicean. And you were a Laodicean, and and the worldwide has done some pretty bad things, as they admit, but he says, we just go about condemning them. I mean, he's protecting worldwide. We're not condemning them. We're warning them, trying to help save their eternal lives and get their focus on Jerusalem. We're not condemning them at all. But if you were a Laodicean, and they were sitting there, and reading what we say and all of that, there would be just one church that you'd hate, right? Just one. And that's the one that's exposing you. But brethren, I tell you, if you start having serious questions, and that's good to have questions, you need to question. And I mean with the right attitude. If you begin to have a lot of them, you better be careful. Or quite a few of them, you'd better get answers. Because what bothers me about that is this. Look, God has to give you understanding. And if you won't submit to the law and the government, He won't give it to you. He won't do it. So, that's easy to disprove. Well, then you can go on and read in Zechariah 4 and verse 13 and 4 and verse 14 where it talks about the... let me just read that. Even if I have to go a little over, I've got to get this part about God's house in here. Now that I mentioned it, I know that you understand I must finish this. But this is the anniversary, and I think I can take a little more leeway here. Zechariah, I know that you people are spiritual enough that you're not concerned about the refreshments you're supposed to get here in 5 or 10 minutes. I know you, that you're much more concerned about the spiritual food. But I will try to wind this down very quickly so that you don't panic. Zechariah 4 and verse 13. And he answered me and said, "Know you not what these be?" And I said, "No, my Lord." Then said he, "These are the two anointed ones, two human beings that stand by the Lord of the whole earth." And well, let me back up just a little bit. Verse 12, and I answered again and said unto him, "What be these two olive branches, which through the two golden pipes empty the golden oil out of themselves?" Now there were two men and two arrows, and there's golden oil flowing through them. Where is that golden oil? Where is it? I mean, where is the oil that makes the lamp shine? Where is that new revelation that God said He would give His church? Where is it? Does Rod Meredith have it? No, he doesn't. Does United? No, they don't have it. They don't have any new revelation. I don't even think they talk like they do. I think they know they don't. But in verse 14, it talks about the Lord. That means, number 13 in Strong's, Adon, Lord of the whole earth. And that means proprietor, master, owner, ruler, commander. Oh, you mean we've got a commander, we've got a proprietor, a master, an owner that rules over us? Well, yes, that's right. We were bought with a price. We are not our own. We were bought with a price. Christ come down here and went through this butcher shop so that we might be able to have this wonderful truth and have our goal of choosing Jerusalem as well as our Father. That Christ made all of that possible. But there is a commander. There is a government. There is a law. And there's a master and there's a ruler, and it's not me. And it never could be me or Mr. Armstrong. We're nothing. And we're sinners and we're weak. God is doing this. God is doing it all. But the golden oil is flowing. Where is it? Well, you can read 30-some booklets in a book and in this church, and that ought to tell you a lot. But anyhow, let me just quickly get into this last part. I want to read just a little from Zechariah's flying scroll, and I'll make this quick. The central theme in the book of Zechariah is God's temple, a type of God's church. And then it goes on to talk about, maybe you could just read this flying scroll later, how about all this is really a type of God's throne. And this flying scroll has the same dimensions as the two cherubim who are over the mercy seat, which is a type of God's throne. And in that ark is the law and the rod and the manna or the golden oil as a part of it. And I said, here I've mentioned before that inside that ark are, well, the mercy seat, and I just mentioned that. I don't need to get into that. But God is trying to keep our minds on His throne. And that's why does this flying scroll have those dimensions? Well, do we know enough about the Bible to say, well, now if God puts those dimensions in the church, He must want us to know. Why would He put them in this end time prophecy? Why would God do that if we didn't need to know? You need to read this flying scroll, Zechariah's flying scroll. Again, it's really a vital article. And then ancient Israel was led by the ark physically, and David took it to Jerusalem. Well, why Jerusalem, I wonder? Why is David always hanging around Jerusalem? What's that about? The eternal... has chosen Jerusalem. And he's chosen David's throne to be there in Jerusalem with Christ sitting on it. And there are two women mentioned in Zechariah 5. One is the inner court and one is the outer court. Who are they, brethren? Who are those two women? Do we really know? Well, we must know. Do you know what's wrong with that one woman? Well, United even said they're experimenting with a new government. They didn't like the old one. And there's only one that's going to rule in the world tomorrow, and that's about one of the craziest statements you could ever read. What do you mean you're experimenting with another government? Didn't we have the government of God? Then if we didn't have the government of God, we would deceive people, and it doesn't make any difference really where you go, does it? Where is the other, where are the two women? Where are they? Well, that happened after Mr. Armstrong died, and this is all about the Laodicean era. As I said, Mr. Armstrong and Zerubbabel is just an inset, inset into this three chapters, or two especially, there in chapters 3 and 4. But let me read to you about a house that's going to be built in verse 10. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, Whither do these... No, wait, let me back up just to verse 9. Then lifted I up my eyes, and looked, and behold, there came out two women, and the wind was in their wings, for they had wings like the wings of a stork. And they lifted up the ephod between the earth and the heaven. In other words, those two women, they're not lost, neither one of them, but one of them's going to have to repent very deeply. Then said I to the angel that talked with me, where do these bear the ephod? Now, where are the people that bear this measuring device? Or the ephod is something used to measure. And we have to measure. Revelation 11 verses 1 and 2. And we measure some, those that will be measured. Verse 11, he said unto me, where are those that are bearing the measuring device or the measuring operation, where are they taking the ephod? Where are they taking this truth of God? Really is what it is. We measure with God's truth. Where are they taking it? And he said unto me to build it an house in the land of Shinar. That means Babylon, the world before Christ gets here. And he said unto me to build it, the ephod, an house, not the people of God, but it, an house in the land of Shinar, and it shall be established and set there upon her base. Let me read what Gesenius says about this. It could be spiritual, and it is spiritual and physical. It could be the one, in this case, it is both. It could be a royal house, it says here, or the palace of David. It could be the house of God or the temple. It could be the temple of God in Jerusalem. And that, of course, is where we're all aiming anyhow, isn't it? So, that's the ultimate house. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. But you have two women. And one group makes the measurements. That's Revelation 11 and verse 2. And it's the measuring that's going on that shows you there are two churches and not one as there was. You read the article. I don't have time to get into that. But we are doing the measuring. And soon the repentant Laodiceans will be a part of that, but with a lesser reward. We know at this point that the Philadelphians are doing the measuring and trying to help the repentant Laodiceans make some changes. But what do the... what do we do for that it or that ephah, or that the measuring operation that's going on. What with God's truth. So here's the thing. If you have that we have a gymnasium here, and with God's truth goes out from this gymnasium, but it wasn't built for it. It wasn't built for the truth of God to emanate from this building, and that is its purpose. Remember, if the truth of God's there, or God is there, that means God is there in spirit, right? So that must mean this is talking about the house of God, where it was built for the very purpose for God to be there in spirit. And how do you know He's there in spirit? Well, you have all of this truth to measure everything with. And if you know all this truth, you know what these two women are about. You know which woman is which. You know. Because you've measured. It's another way of saying it's the house of God, isn't it? John 17, verse 70 says, "Your word is truth." And that's the Bible, and Jesus Christ is the Bible in print. Or the Bible in print is actually... He is that when He's on. It was on this earth. That's what He was. The Bible in print. He just said what's in the Bible. So this is a house for truth. This is a house for God, and it's His truth, and it's built for the purpose of measuring. I mean, it's going to really have a message. It's going to measure everybody in this world ultimately. And if they don't want to go to Jerusalem, they're not going any place. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem, and that's where the headquarters is going to be forever. And God doesn't say, well, you get to choose which city you want to go to. But how good are you at measuring? Now here is the Interpreter's Bible. It says this, a house, that is a temple, is to be built for the ephah measure. What does that mean? Well, it means that God's truth, that house is built for God's truth, which is, as it flows out of that building, shows that God is there in spirit. He is there. He and the Son are there, and they fellowship with us here. But this house is His. He has a house, and we'll have a house on this earth. And we have the honor of building that house. Here's what Barnes says. A house or temple was to be built for it, for its honor and glory. That is the truth of God. Who are the people that bear the ephod, brethren? Who are the people? This is an end time prophecy. And that's that. This whole, all of these three chapters tell you that. We must know who is measuring. Here's what Anchor Bible says. Temple, the Hebrew word for house, is used here as a designation for a divine residence. Even the commentaries can see that. It's for God to dwell in. And of course, we see that tangibly through God's truth coming out of that temple. Christ and the Father are one. And that truth shows you that they're one. The temple, of course, is the church of God, as we've heard so many times. Well, maybe I think that you can read Revelation 10 and verse 11, where it says we're going to prophesy again. Well, this is about prophesying again. Well, what is associated with that? Revelation 11 and verse 1. Let me just quickly turn there. I think I do need to read this to you. Revelation 10 and verse 11, and He said unto me, you must prophesy again before many peoples and nations and tongues and kings. That's the message going out. And what do we do? What else do we do? And there was given me, or man, a rod like unto a rod, and the angel stood saying, rise and measure the temple of God and the altar, that's the ministry, like Mr. Meredith, and them that worship therein. Now, of course, he will be measured, so the ministers are measured too. That includes me. God is the head of this. We all get measured. Rise, though, and use that measure. wise. Use those, that measuring truth that you have. Rise up and teach what Mr. Armstrong taught. I mean, really teach what he taught. And if you do that, I'll give you more new revelation, and you'll be able to do a work. And that's what we're doing. Verse 2, but the court which is without the temple, leave out. Here's the other woman. And measure it not. Well, they won't be measured. For it is given unto the Gentiles. And the holy city, Jerusalem, you see, shall they tread underfoot 42 months. Do we know what's going to happen to Jerusalem? Do we really know? Oh, yes, we do, brethren. And I mean, really, when you talk here about measuring, specifically, Revelation 10 is talking about Mystery of the Ages and Malachi's message. The two specific books that measure and have that truth summarized. And everybody's being measured that's in the Philadelphia Church of God. Really, brethren, you know, if you think about that, well, hey, if I'm going to be measured, that means government. That means law. And we have to reach the point where we really love that and want it and desire it and hunger and thirst for it. And Jerusalem's going to be trodden down, even though it's about to be the headquarters of the whole universe. Isn't that a wonderful, wonderful truth? Isn't it wonderful, brethren, that we can go and know, have be associated with Jerusalem in some ways and know that the outcome is oh so beautiful? But oh, how there will be suffering before that outcome arrives, before we reach that conclusion. The International Critical Commentary says the house to be built is probably not an ordinary dwelling, but a temple more or less imposing. Yes, indeed. I think the house for God is going to be very imposing. It says the most notable feature of the great cities. Well, here, you think it'll be the most notable feature on this land? I think so. By far above the other buildings. So, what about the two women? Where are they? Companion Bible says, it shall be established. It, that is the house, is going to be established for that ephah, and it's going to be prepared for it, it says here. And it will be set there, or fixed or settled. And the word says the base equals a fixed resting place. It's talking about spiritual and physical. Lane says this to say, it is to prepare a permanent habitation for her. Well, it says the women, that's not right. It's for the ephah. Well, they say that later, but they think the woman is the ephah, and that's not right. But anyhow, Lane also says this latter feature is expressed by the building of the house, but intensified by the final clause, established and settled on its base. Now that's spiritual, but it's also physical. Remember, it's in Shinar, or Babylon, this world. And it's a house that God is going to dwell in. Here, listen to this. The Anchor Bible, upon its basis, here's what they say about that. Most commentators take that to refer to a kind of base or pedestal, as indeed the word is commonly used in the Bible, this base. 1 Kings 7, verses 27 through 43. Read that, please. Where it is used 13 times in reference to the 10 bronze stands of the Temple of Solomon. Certainly sounds like something physical, doesn't it? And also they say the meaning here, there, and in the present context is to set in its rightful place. And it's going to all the land. And really, brethren, if you understand everything you need to know about God's house, then that in itself would tell you what's going on right here. But we know this is, if we look at it here, we can see that it is physical and spiritual. And it's in the context of a flying scroll. So that measure. measuring has to do with Malachi's message, and a lot more. That house is going to be filled with truth, and what a wonderful thing that's going to be. Well, I wanted to mention something here that I don't have time to get into, so, and maybe a couple of issues here I want to discuss, and I just don't have time to get into it. I will just mention briefly, this is really some pretty interesting stuff. We won that court case in Britain, and I wanted to to spend some time on that because it is so interesting, and I'll tell you about that later. I just have some more material here that needs to be covered, so maybe I can speak again pretty quickly, or if not, I'll certainly cover it at the conference. But it was really quite an interesting little court case that we had in Britain, and how God worked it out to really bring it some things out in the open that I think you'll find interesting. But here is the thing, brethren, that we need to get out of all of this is, and I'm going to have to talk more about the house. I know I didn't have enough time to get into that the way I want to, but it is a wonderful prophecy that needs to be written about and talked about more. But here's the point. It's all this is about what's happening in Jerusalem above and how God is directing us to build His house here on this earth and give every bit of truth we possibly can to this world through a marvelous building. But you'll see, as I talk about that court case, you'll see that there's always a war. There's always a war going on. Satan is trying to destroy us. I can't tell you that he's not trying to do that. He's trying to destroy every single one of you and me. That's what he's trying to do, and that's what these battles are all about. The Israeli government says, well, we're tired of fighting. What does that mean? Well, we have to tell them what it means. It means Jerusalem is about to fall if they don't change that attitude. And if we're weary and worn down and we're tired of fighting, we're about to lose. We're about to lose this Jerusalem that God has given all of us. It's ours, but we have to fight our way to Jerusalem. And we can't grow tired of fighting. And we won't if we're listening to Jerusalem from above. It's a real war. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. And we have to get there. We have to get there and we have to finish this process. And everything lies ahead. Everything wonderful you could ever imagine lies ahead. But we have to get to Jerusalem. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem. So we really need, if you look at that closely, you know that we need to have in-depth Bible study. We need to know what God is talking about. And we need to realize, brethren, this is far too mighty and powerful and wonderful and moving and stirring to ever let Satan take it away from us. The Eternal has chosen Jerusalem, and the Eternal's sons have also chosen Jerusalem.
All right, just a couple of international announcements here. And several people have expressed to me they've really missed my humor over the few weeks I've been traveling, or others have done announcements. So an anniversary is similar to a birthday, and it reminds me of a person who was recently 100 years of age. He was an old man, and a local radio station actually interviewed him. "What's your secret to longevity?" the reporter asked. "I never argue with anyone," the man replied. "Surely that can't be it," said the reporter. The man shrugged. "I suppose you're right." Okay. All right, the 2008 Ministerial Conference, which will be held from January 2nd through January 8th, is fast approaching. The events that will be held on the weekend of January 5th, 2008 will be Sabbath morning tea before services, special Sabbath services, a family dance in the evening. On Sunday the 6th, there will be tours of the AC campus in the morning, and at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon, we will have the official groundbreaking ceremony for the House for God. Since we need an estimate of attendance, we ask that you let HQ know if you plan to attend. The person to contact is Mrs. Deborah Leap, and you may contact her by phone at 4. This says 04, but it should be 405-340-7474, 405-340-7474, or email Deborah, D-E-B-O-R-A-H, Leap, at PCOG.org. Deborah Leap at PCOG.org. You are welcome to attend all the activities mentioned above, but housing will not be provided. Regarding the public appearance campaign update, the resumption of the Trumpet Lecture Series made its latest stop in the nation's capital in mid-November. Washington, D.C. was selected because the Key of David has aired there for well over 10 years. The quality of those in attendance was very good, including several former Worldwide Church of God members, but we were disappointed by the low turnout in a city that has had a powerful witness for over a decade. 18 people registered for the ongoing follow-up Bible studies conducted by Regional Director Cal Culpepper. The lower-than-expected turnout for the campaign caused us to rethink the schedule for the coming lecture series. Trumpet subscribers living within a 100-mile radius of a PAC location are invited to the lectures if they have been subscribers for more than 6 months. New subscribers come primarily from the TV and newsstand programs. Because Mr. Fleury's schedule is so tight with writing, TV, administrative, and pastoral duties, we have to carefully decide how best to reach the largest number of people. While the PACs will remain part of the plan, we are scaling back the number of cities we plan to serve with these lectures. Plans will soon be in place for Mr. Fleury to visit the Caribbean and Toronto, Ontario, with the Trumpet Lecture Series in the springtime. Besides those two locations, we are not certain where the PACs will go next. We are excited about the potential turnout in the Caribbean and Canada, where the TV program has aired for quite some time, complemented by a strong newsstand program. And may I have the permission to add that in the Toronto area, we're also distributing thousands underground in the subway system for the first time as a trial run. With escalating costs of broadcasting and the financial burden on the local brethren who participate in the newsstand program distribution, we are analyzing if there are more effective and less costly methods of reaching the general population. It is a lot of wear and tear on the brethren at their expense to supply those stands, and doing a great job at that. In the coming year, we will reallocate some of our newsstand budget to promote the newtrumpet.com website more aggressively. Additional money saved by scaling back the PAC lectures will also be used to promote the church's websites. Last night you heard about the Trumpet Weekly website, which will incorporate the INR. And I talked with Mr. Redford this morning, and he said that if we're already receiving the electrical copy of the INR, we'll automatically receive the Trumpet Weekly. So there's no need to call up your regional director, i.e. me and some of the others, to get back on that publication. We are doing our best to keep up with the changing landscape of today's technology. While many different programs have been effective in the past, we are exploring better ways to reach this dying world with God's witness message. Okay, your prayers for that, brethren, will be very much appreciated. We will have the privilege of special music. The Armstrong Concert Choir with conductor Mark Jenkins and pianist Linda Mouse. They will be singing New Heaven, New Earth by Charles Romer. The text is taken from Revelation 21. We will have another song, so Mr. Fleury will be able to preach to the choir as they filter back to their seats during the first part there of his message. And then we will hear this main message brought to us on this very special day, our 18th anniversary, our Pastor General, Gerald Fleury.